2001 Salt Lake Sunstone Symposium, Session 301, Devotional, Led by the Light. Participant, Kelly Forbes.
Somebody, as Mark Twain says, has been there. Kelly Forbes, our devotional speaker and leader today, and I'm reading off the bio here, is a member of the Executive Board of the Worldwide Organization for Women and the Utah Adoption Council. And the most important thing, I think, she's a mother of five and works with teens at Rising Star Communications and in the public school system. So she is what I call one of the Lord's workers in the vineyard. So without further ado, Kelly.
Okay. I should probably clarify, I don't actually work with Rising Star anymore. I did for about 5 years, but I'm not there right now. Anyway... This is, thanks for coming. This is going to be a small little intimate group. I feel weird behind this little podium thing. But I just want to start out by telling you that I'm pleased to be able to be here today and hope that you'll find a little bit of humor in what I have to say and a little bit of profound thought as well. A few years ago, I had the opportunity to do a personal growth training program at Rising Star Communications. This is an experiential training program similar to numerous others that are out there. And during that training, one of the things that was discussed was the fact that the only way out of something is through it. Every time you try to suppress something, it comes back to haunt you again and again and again, and the only way out is through. Also, in that training, I did a ropes course. And if you're familiar with what a ropes course is, it's an outdoor adventure type thing for a day, and you do all kinds of crazy things like jump out of trees and fall off of stumps, and what it is is a very physical way of learning to communicate in a different way than just with your mouth or your voice, learning to trust people, learning to become a team, and also just the sheer physical strain of some of the activities lead to great knowledge that you can do more than you ever thought you could. And one of the things that I got to do in that ropes course was a lifeline. And for the lifeline, they blindfolded me and put me, they queued it up by having me bring to mind the most important thing to me in my life. At the time, I was pregnant and had been longing for a child for several years, and there's a 9-year gap between my two children, and so as you can imagine, I had been wanting this child for quite some time. And so when they had me bring the most important thing to mind to me, I brought to mind this baby that I was carrying. I had suffered a miscarriage just prior to this pregnancy, and so it was quite important for me to be able to carry the baby to term. And as I was put on that lifeline and told to, I was given some specific instructions, which I found out later or realized later that I really should have listened carefully to those instructions. One of them was to not let go of the lifeline, to continue forward on the lifeline, and when I reached the end, to reach out and somebody would be there to greet me. And I started on my way, and of course it's a rope that is tied around bushes and rocks and up hills and, you know, around trees and all kinds of things, and so I'm trying to follow this rope blindfolded, and it was raining and muddy, and I was making a mess of things, and someone came and brought me an egg, a raw egg, and they said to me, What was that most important thing that you brought to mind? And I told them that it was the baby that I was carrying. And they gave me an egg, and they said, this egg represents that baby. Take it safely to the end of the lifeline. And, of course, you know, carrying a raw egg through this obstacle course was not an easy task. So I put the egg in, I was wearing a jacket, and I put it in the pocket of the jacket. I figured it would be warm there and safe, and it would keep my hands free as well. Well, as I continued on this lifeline, someone kept coming and trying to take my egg. They'd ask me where my egg was, and I told them it was in a very safe place. Later, I found out that there were other people that were participating in this activity with me that had actually given their egg away. But when I got to the end of the lifeline and the rope just came to an end and I'm standing there holding it, I didn't know what to do because I hadn't listened carefully to the instructions. And it took me quite some time to figure out that I needed to reach out and ask for help and ask for someone to be there for me. It's a very hard thing for me to do in my life, and as I think it is for a lot of people. Giving help is much easier for most people than receiving help. Although if there's no one willing to receive, then those that are willing to give don't get that blessing either. Interestingly enough, later in that pregnancy, I got to learn that lesson in a very big way because I got very ill and for 2 months was bedridden, and the people of my ward took care of me and brought dinner to my family twice a week, which was a great relief to me to not have to worry about whether or not they were going to have a decent meal and just live on macaroni and cheese and top ramen for the rest of the pregnancy. So anyway, that was a really interesting and fun experience. A couple of years later, I had the opportunity to go to Israel, something that I had wanted to do for many, many years. And in Israel, I got to go through Hezekiah's Tunnel. Now, for those of you that are not familiar with the total specs of Hezekiah's Tunnel, let me just share with you a little bit about it. Hezekiah's Tunnel is an elaborate engineering scheme extending about 1,770 feet, so it's about a third of a mile, through limestone rock, bringing the waters of Gihon Spring inside the walls of Jerusalem to the Pool of Shalom, where Jesus healed the blind man. Okay, the tunnel itself was built in the days of Hezekiah, about 701 BC, as a defense against possible attack from the Syrian army under someone. Don't know how to say that name, so we'll just let that one go. Anyway, this tunnel has been chiseled through solid limestone rock, and when it was made, they thought there was a natural spring and a crack in the rock. And so those that were making the tunnel followed the line of that crack and the water, the way it was naturally flowing. However, they were chiseling out of rock, so they only made it large enough for one person to pass through at a time. So it's a very narrow and sometimes a very low tunnel. And, of course, because it winds through the mountain, there's absolutely no light inside of that tunnel. There's also water in the tunnel, and it can be anywhere from ankle deep to thigh deep, depending on where you are in the tunnel. And sometimes it's thigh deep, and you're leaning over with your, you know, head almost touching the water. Well, as I went through this tunnel with about 50 of my closest personal friends, I say that facetiously, we were all on the same tour together. But there were about 25 people in front of me, and about that same many behind me. So I was right in the middle of this group. And at first, as I walked in, I wasn't apprehensive at all. I thought, this is going to be fun. This is going to be a piece of cake, you know. And I had my little flashlight, which was my only source of light within the tunnel. And there were people that had forgotten the flashlight, so they were in complete darkness or relied on the people around them to give them a little bit of illumination. And this is the very flashlight that I used in Hezekiah's Tunnel. It will forever be close to my heart. And I had my little flashlight on, and I was going through, and I did have a girlfriend with me that I was rooming with and another couple from my ward that was on the same tour, and we were all four together in this group. I was the first, and then the couple, and then my other friend. About a third of the way through this tunnel, I had what I would call a complete meltdown. I didn't know I was claustrophobic, but apparently I am. And it would have been really funny to have had a tape recorder on me because I'm sure I sounded like Rain Man. After I went through this personal growth training program, one of the biggest things that I learned is that I can choose my own experience. I can create my own experience, and I can choose my attitude. And so I don't have to get mad at someone on the road when they cut me off or do something bad to me. And instead of giving them, you know, a vulgar sign or something, I put my hand up and go like this, which means I give you a hug. I give you a hug. Love and peace. I love you. That kind of thing. Because I can choose my own experience. Red lights when you're in a hurry, they are a great lesson in patience. When you get one of those great adrenaline rushes, it's good to be alive, isn't it? So as I'm in this tunnel and I'm having this meltdown, and the only way I can describe it is that it felt like a blanket of blackness that started at my feet and came up over my back and over my head, and I could not control it. But I was in the tunnel with my flashlight. I had it on, and I'm looking down in the water so that I can't see the closeness of the walls, and I'm saying, I can create my own experience. I can do something different. I can be somewhere else. I'm skiing. Yeah, that's where I am. I'm skiing. It's wide open spaces. I was just talking to myself like Rain Man. And then I would point my light at the people in front of me, and I'd go, could you please hurry? Please hurry. And then I'd point it at the people behind me, and I'd go, don't get too close. And this continued for quite some time. I asked for a blessing right there in the tunnel. I said, I need a blessing, and I need it right now. And the gentleman that was with me from my ward gave me a blessing, although I'm sure it helped to a certain extent, but I still was in a complete panic mode. I couldn't breathe. I have never experienced a panic attack like that before, and I've only had it a couple of times since, and it's not something I'd recommend. Anyway, after a period of time with this chattering to myself and begging the people to hurry and telling the others not to get too close, my girlfriend, it was her husband that gave me the blessing, she came towards me, and I was just begging her, crying, finally started crying. Once I started crying and just gave in to this feeling of and let them know that I needed some help, it was a huge release. I was finally able to breathe again. And she came to me and she took my hand and she said, you don't have to do this alone. Now, I haven't cried about this before. It's interesting. And you know, as she took my hand and started to lead me through that tunnel or help guide me through that tunnel, I thought of the many times in my life when I've needed a helping hand and I've been reluctant to ask for it, the end of the lifeline. And I thought to myself also, this is the ultimate lifeline, this tunnel is. Boy, there was a lot that came to mind. It takes almost an hour to go to walk through the tunnel, a good 45 minutes anyway. And as we were walking along, I said, sing a hymn for me, please. Sing a hymn for me. And she started to sing, Pioneer Children. I'm going, not that one. I don't want that one. Well, that one. And neither one of us could think. But finally, the one that came to mind was Lead Kindly Light, which has a whole new meaning for me now. Because, of course, my light was my little flashlight. As we came towards the end of the tunnel, or what we perceived to be the end of the tunnel, she actually made me turn the light off, turn the flashlight off, so that I was in complete darkness. And it was at that point that I realized that part of the panic that I was experiencing, part of the feeling of complete hopelessness, loss, and darkness that I was feeling, was stemming from some experiences that I had had as a child. Growing up in southern Utah in Kanab, I don't know how many of you have grown up in a small town, but even in some of these larger cities, there seems to always be one person within a particular age group who is singled out as the scapegoat. And there's usually one girl and one boy that are quite mistreated, and I was that girl. And so one of the things that I had done was in Kanab, they were taking the city ditch, the irrigation ditch, and they were putting it underground. and to put it underground, they were burying these large cement culverts and creating large tunnels of culverts. And there were numerous occasions during the construction of that ditch that I would hide in those culverts. I would crawl inside of them until there was absolutely no light at all to get away from the people that were trying to hurt me and harm me, or even just with their words. Sometimes it was a physical threat, and sometimes it was just harmful words. And I would spend hours in these little tunnels, but it also felt a little bit in like an entrapment and very hopeless. And I don't know if you've ever been in complete, absolute darkness where there is not even one shred of light, but when I open my eyes in that kind of a space, it's almost like there's little swirling pigments that moves around, because you can't see your hand, you can't see anything. It is completely dark. And when she had me turn that light off in the tunnel of Hezekiah's tunnel, I went back to my childhood and realized that's where a lot of my panic was coming from, and not feeling like I had anyone that I could turn to for help back then. She made me turn the light off because she wanted me to have the experience of seeing the light from the end of the tunnel and knowing that it wasn't a train, which was a great thing. I did try to keep my sense of humor, and in fact did say to her, "Oh my gosh, I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and it's not a train." It was really fun. As I got out of the tunnel, and of course I was an emotional disaster by then, it's a good thing I put makeup on that morning. It was all down my face, so I was very beautiful when I emerged from the tunnel as well. And I thought about the things that I had been saying to myself inside the tunnel about the skiing and all that kind of stuff. I came to a realization, at least for me it was a profound realization, of why I love skiing. I'm not an athletic person by nature, but skiing is something that I have learned how to do, and I'm pretty good at it. I'm not an expert skier, but I'm a good intermediate skier. And it's something that I absolutely love and adore and do every chance I get. I love to be out in the wide open spaces, in that quiet, serene surroundings that God has created for us with such great beauty and magnitude, and to have the crispness and the coolness of that air on my face, and riding the lift and just looking at the mountains and seeing that majesty, is, I never tire of it. And then, of course, there is that need for speed coming down the hill, and it's just really fun. And one thing that I found about snow, for the most part, is that it's very forgiving. If I make a mistake and I get a ski caught in a track or catch an edge or something like that, and I take a fall, I don't normally ever get hurt, especially because I like to ski in fresh powder. Not a lot of fresh powder. Packed powder, groomed powder, with about 3 inches of fresh on top. That's the ultimate skiing experience for me. And I thought about that and how when I fall in the snow, it almost embraces me. And it's very forgiving. And contrasted that with the tunnel, and how that tunnel was so hard and so solid and so unforgiving, and absolutely the only way out was through. I couldn't go back. There were 25 people behind me. I couldn't go ahead of the people in front of me because, of course, there was no room to pass them. So I found out in a big way the only way out was through. I also thought about how that experience related to another experience when I was younger. And because of my desire to be wanted and accepted and all that kind of stuff, I fell into that trap of thinking that a physical relationship with a boy is love. That's a manifestation of love. And I found out the hard way that it isn't, and I ended up pregnant as a teenager. I was 18 when I got pregnant. And fortunately for me, I had already graduated from high school, but I had some really tough decisions to make. And I remember telling my parents that I was pregnant and going to their house and how afraid I was and feeling like I was going to have to go through this experience alone. And certain, absolutely certain that my father was going to kill me, literally. If not that, but he would for sure physically harm me. And I remember going to my parents' home and knocking on the door. How dumb is that at your own house? And my dad came to the door, and when he saw me, he put his arms around me. And he told me that he loved me. And he told me he would help me through this. And you know, that was exactly what I needed. I didn't need to be persecuted. I didn't need to be made sick, fat, and wrong about what had happened. I was already shooting on myself quite a little bit. And my parents stood by me through that experience. I chose to place that baby for adoption because for me and for him especially, I felt like that would be, he deserved more than I could give him. And so I did that. It was really hard to do that. And it's an experience that has stayed with me my whole life. Fortunately for me, 14 years later, we'll move ahead, I'm married, I have 3 children. I went through a very hard year. My father died, my grandmother died, my husband's grandmother died. 2 children in our neighborhood were killed accidentally. It was a very hard year. I also moved into a new home and, of course, tripled my mortgage. And 6 months after that, my husband lost his job. Well, I was working, so I thought, okay, it'll be okay. We've gone through this before. It's not a big deal. But 3 weeks later, I was also laid off. 2 different companies. And I truly went into a depression at that time and, again, had to reach out for help. Fortunately for me, in my layoff package, counseling was one of my benefits. So I decided to take advantage of that. Called the outplacement company and said, would you please set me up an appointment with the counselor? I really need to see someone. The normal counselor was out of town, but sensing the urgency in my plea, they set me up with a different woman, and I went to see her. And the second time I was there to see her, I told her about my adoption experience. And as I started to tell her about the adoption experience, she got very emotional herself and told me that she had been on the receiving end of an adoption. And of course, this was a great opening for me, so I went into more detail about my own experience and told her of a book I was writing about my adoption experience, which unfortunately still isn't finished, but it will be. It will be, hopefully, by the end of the year. And I told her about the first chapter of the book, which is describes the day the baby was born, the feelings that I was having of complete darkness. I'll tell you this much. When I walked into the hospital to give birth to this baby that I knew I was placing for adoption. You ever seen one of those scary movies where the special effects, they show a hallway and all of a sudden the hallway is really long and really dark? Yeah, that's what that was like at the hospital. And it felt very cold and very, of course, sterile. And back then, 21 years ago, they didn't have these nice birthing centers that they have now. You did your labor in a room that looked like a barracks or something, with steel lockers and, you know, little twin beds that were very cold and unpersonal. And then you delivered in the delivery room, which was like the operating room. And so I felt very insignificant, very alone, very afraid, and, you know, just it was really hard. My mom was there with me. It's just not the same. I can tell you, after having a husband there with me, it's not the same having your mom there. So as I told her about this experience, I told her that I didn't have any regrets and that I would make that same decision again to give him up. And I said, my only regret is that I never got to hold him. I just wanted to hold him one time to tell him goodbye, that I loved him, and to explain to him why I was making the decision I was. And I said, I felt like even though he was a baby, that somehow he'd understand. And I didn't get to do that. I was not allowed to hold him. And I said, he's going to be 14 pretty soon, and I'll never have that experience back. And she said, why didn't you get to hold him? And I said, well, Kanab's a small town, and that's just the way they did things down there. And when I said that, she dropped her notebook, and she started to breathe heavily. And I thought she was going to pass out, and her hands flew up to her face, and she just kept saying, "Oh my gosh, oh my gosh." And I looked at her, and I'm going, "Oh my gosh, are you okay? Don't die on me." I thought she was having a heart attack or something. And she just kept saying it, and finally this voice from somewhere, of course it was from me, but I didn't realize that, it said, do you have him? And then I looked around and went, "Oh, that was really dumb. I can't believe I said that." And she amazingly shook her head yes, and she said, "I think I do." And amazingly enough, this woman, who I was there seeking help from for something completely unrelated to my adoption experience, was the woman who had adopted my child. And that was amazing. Of course, the first thing she said to me was, "I think our professional relationship has just ended." And I said, "I think that's okay, because I don't think I need counseling anymore." It was truly as if the weight of the world had been lifted. I didn't realize how heavily that had weighed on me. There was a physical lightening that took place during that experience. And again, she was there for me and helped to guide me. And there's a scripture that I have to read to you. It's Romans 8:28, and it's let me look under my bookmarks. I love this little thing. It's so cool. Okay, Romans 8:28. "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." And it's amazing to me how the Lord has taken this experience of this pregnancy and this awful time in my life and turned it into something that has worked for my good. I am truly blessed. There is another one that I have to read to you too. Has to do with that light at the end of the tunnel. As I was looking for scriptures that would go along with my what I was saying today. Let's go back. Let's see. I thought this one was kind of funny. Okay. I thought this was funny because as I was doing it, it was during the point when I was trying to think of, you know, what it felt like coming out of Hezekiah's tunnel and coming out of the pregnancy and going through that experience, going through, you know, whatever. Did I mention earlier that through Hezekiah's tunnel I was also pregnant with another child? So the first time I did the Lifeline with the training company, I was pregnant, and the second time doing this other sort of Lifeline, I was also pregnant. This was it. This is Alma 36:20. "And oh, what joy and what marvelous light I did behold. Yea, my soul was filled with joy, as exceeding as was my pain." And that is a true statement of what I felt. I have had the joy of knowing my son. He just returned from a mission about a month ago. And, you know, I don't know that he would have had that experience, that mission experience, had I not placed him for adoption. I really do believe that I made the right decision. I have a wonderful husband. I've been married for 20 years, and we have 5 children now. And the only other time I experienced a true panic like I did in Hezekiah's tunnel was it happened through that pregnancy, and feeling trapped in the pregnancy and knowing that the only way out of the pregnancy was through it, and that I had to be pregnant. I didn't have a vote, and that I was going to have to go through a delivery again. I woke up one night and slugged my husband and said, "Look what you did to me. I have to go through another delivery." But I think that probably the reason with my last pregnancy that I was so panic-stricken at that time was because I had been so ill with the previous one and was starting to have that same experience again. I didn't get quite as sick, but I did end up... I didn't get hospitalized as many times, let's put it that way. But I did end up having to rely on those people around me. I hope from what I've shared with you today that you can see the humor in what I've been through, see the profoundness of what I've been through, and that perhaps it will shed a little light on your own life and the growth and the help in knowing that you've got someone there to guide you through. You know, if we will turn to the Savior and our God, He will guide us through. And He will be there for us. He will take our burdens upon Him. We can give them to Him. And no matter what we've done, no matter what we've been through, and no matter what's been done to us, we can be forgiven and we can move forward. And I say these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a broken hand.
All day.
Oh,
no.